Aftershocks by Andrew James. Part 1. Seismology. The science and study of earthquakes and their origins. Chapter 3. A Global Nomad. I am a global nomad. At least that's what others have called it. The name of that condition which afflicts me. A name which carries with it some vague imagining of a Bedouin tribesman with a sandblasted face, wrapped in billowing robes of pale colors, sitting astride a camel as he wanders the desert. What few possessions he owns are tucked inside leather satchels hanging beside him, which jingle a staccato tune as he crests another sand dune. Each night he makes a camp beneath the stars, and with the coming of each dawn, he saddles up and rides off in search of new lands and people. It's a vision of a life full of adventure and new possibilities, and an idea of an eventual oasis he may one day call home. Until then, he surrenders to the mysterious lure of the next horizon. I assure you, the reality of my condition was never this glorious. In fact, I would argue the thrill of being referred to by such a title is lost when I think back on the realities of nomadic life. Of course, I never grew up on a great tundra or some desolate expanse of wasteland. The euphemism of the global nomad is a joke, a silly name to distract from the truth of such a lonely existence. A childhood removed would be a more appropriate title. It was removed from all of those great gifts that one imagines when the very word childhood is uttered. It was a childhood removed from friendships and grandparents and overcrowded family dinners with too much food and regularly scheduled weekend customs, complete with the thoughtless dedication to local sports teams and a general sense of awareness of who and what you are, but most importantly, where you come from. To this day, when I tell people of my childhood and where I was raised, which is to say in countless countries and states that I was often hurried from one after another, racing from each with barely enough time to unpack and then pack again, they express some sense of excitement or jealousy, their eyes open in wonder as they ask me to extol the thrill of living in such a world. They marvel at my tales of traveling the globe and seeing countless worlds and countries, many of them before I even reached my teenage years. I always go along with their excitement. I avoid the truth and simply agree with them. It was great. How could it not have been? It was eye-opening and wondrous. I never say what I'm really thinking. I never tell them that it wasn't until I was in my early 30s that I found a home for myself, or that I am constantly plagued with a need to uproot and move on when I should be settling down, settling deeper. I never tell them that I missed all of the pleasures of childhood that are the cause of so much jealousy I have for my friends who speak so indifferently on the topic of their past, oblivious to the beauty of normality. I never tell them of the sense of confusion I feel when people share their stories of the house they grew up in, or the friends they have known all their life. These memories only instill in me a sense of jealousy. No matter how beautiful or eye-opening the world around me was during my travels, the sights and experiences were always tempered by a wish that I had just one person to share it all with. This is not to say that I don't appreciate the memories or events of my childhood, or that those moments were not beautiful or happy. I can tell you in detail of the sunny warmth of the Champs-Élysées and how beautiful the women were walking the street in their narrow jeans and clothes that seemed so outlandish to me back then. I can laugh at the memory of my father's awkwardness when a pair of men sat at our table outside a bakery a block from the Arc de Triomphe. He had tried to shoo them away as if they were bothersome rodents until my mother had gripped his arm and explained that in Paris, people sat together and this was not America. I can tell you the thrill of riding my bike down a small road between fields of tulips that stretched on to the horizon like a waveless sea, the view broken only by the occasional stone windmill that made the whole expanse something out of one of Van Gogh's paintings. It couldn't be real. There is a memory of the mountains of northern England and the first beer I drank at a little pub nestled between peaks on a winding road that was more likely to be shared with sheep than other cars. My cousin had sneakily handed me the leftover ale in his glass, and I had greedily swallowed it down, then sputtered at the bitter taste. Afterwards, we were hiking to the top of the surrounding mountains, and my father walked me towards the edge to see the view, his arm gripping me tightly against a sudden storm that had sprung up, and his rain jacket whipping at my face as we looked out over the edge of the mountains and to the clouds that were both above us and below. There are memories of such beauty, it shocks me when I think back through them and realize just how many there are. But always those memories are met with a subtle pain and an awareness that each ended too soon. Each memory is a fragment with a frayed and torn edge, a reminder that they end only moments after they begin, and each is torn from a page of another life that is not my own. They are brief glimpses with no permanence. A few steps forward in my memory, and I am back in my own world, and I am on my way to another place, another country, another life. Each new life that was started brought a hope that this would be the one that would finally stick. Each new house and each new bedroom was filled with a cautious dream that this time would be the last time. As I unboxed my belongings and hung posters with frayed, bent edges and countless tiny holes, scars of where they had been pulled down and then put back up time and time again, it was always with a dreamy what if. What if this house was the one we would stay in? What if this was the last time I would be forced to unroll this poster and pin it to the wall above my bed? And it never was. And the boxes that had just been unpacked would once again be repacked and another horizon would be chased. Because of this, I knew very little of my family past my mother and father, who traveled alongside of me. There are glimpses I have of those shadowy and vague figures in my memories, glimpses of early days before I was unceremoniously uprooted and the nomadic life was thrust upon me. Some of these memories are vivid and defining, and others are brief and simple scratches on the surface of my life. I have a fleeting memory of an inherited grandmother I knew little of, but whom I had met after my mother remarried. What little I can recall is of her laying in a bed after a dinner I have long since forgotten as I whispered into a dark room, "Are you dying?" "No, honey," came the whisper back. The next morning she was gone, and I have always wondered what instinct in me at that young age drove me to ask her that question. To be certain, I was young and lacked tact or the gentleness of word that would come to define my more adult style, but I remember deeply in that brief moment, an almost absolute certainty that my grandmother lay dying. I still remain curious if those of us close to either birth or death are more acutely in tune to the presence of that other side that we all sprang from, and to which we will all one day return, but that is the only memory I possess of her, a disappointment to me, as I still carry a sense of her with me, a vague awareness that she had been gentle and kind, but I lack any image of her to truly qualify that. There are memories of my aunt, a large-bosomed woman with tough elbows and a penchant for well-cooked apple pie that would come from apples sneakily and hastily picked from low branches hanging over rock walls, discovered on walks through the neighborhood in the afternoon. I remember her as being strong and large and tough in a way that endeared you to her rather than repelled you, a style that can never be learned but is some intrinsic value so few possess. In those early years of my life, before my travels began and I was forced to watch as my first life disappeared in a small, rectangular window, fading into distance and clouds, much like my memory of it now, she had been a concrete center of my life. She had been as a grandmother to me where none existed at the time. The remembrance I have of her as a benevolent grandparent would later be reinforced with the realization she had raised my own mother when theirs had passed at an early age. She died not too long ago now, and I never said goodbye or told her what it meant to me that my earliest memories are full of brief glimpses of her. And her presence in those memories made each feel so full of love. Or that I now bear a tattoo on my shoulder solely dedicated to her and her short but powerful influence in my life. There was a grandfather who sat next to me in a small, bright living room decorated by overly patterned and floral chairs as he struggled with sentences and I struggled with comfort and words to respond with. A hasty remark about his watch to fill the silent void, and then he was removing it, pressing it into my hand with a firmness that surprised me given his frail appearance. I quickly declined the gift and gave it back to him, feigning a lack of need for a watch. After all, I had one at home, I lied. He died also a few years ago, and I always wished I had that watch instead of the few quick shadows of him that litter an otherwise overly cluttered mind. He had been silent in the years I knew him. When he did speak, it was with a quiet, dignified voice that carried very little impression of the man I had heard he once was. He had been a powerful man from the war who held a stoic exterior and grew up in a time when strong men were truly strong, but that strength lent itself to a sense of callousness that often carried its own painful impact to those around him. There was a quick kiss on the forehead to a half-sister, I remember for only a heartbeat, neatly pressed into her car seat next to me on a ride home from visiting a man whose name was Father, but never was one. He insisted I kiss her on the head despite my protest and say goodbye to her as I left the car, never to see him or her again. Before that, a memory of crying alone in a room that wasn't mine, but that I had been forced into on one of the mandatory visits to see that same man, and him picking me up and carrying me downstairs, asking me what all the fuss was about. I couldn't tell him that I had been crying because I was lonely and missed home, and I had never wanted to visit him in the first place. I was supposed to be strong, and I knew, somehow I knew, that I shouldn't tell him I'd never wanted to come. Even at that age, I had a desperate need to make others happy, and so I lied to him, and instead, I betrayed myself by claiming a bad dream about my own death, to which he had attempted to soothe me by telling me it would be years until that happened, and that I had so much life left yet to live. I remember a long stretch of backyard, decorated by clothes and sheets hanging on lines held in place by old wooden and rusted metal clothespins, shifting in a breeze that could not be felt but only seen. Behind them, a house rose up on the other side of a tall wooden fence that I hardly ever noticed because this yard was a world in itself for me to explore. At the end of a short path was a greenhouse hiding a mess of ripe tomatoes and flowering plants all intertwined and a wealth of garden tools that became my implements of adventure and battle. A rake became a spear and a shovel my sword as I would steal them and spend my afternoons in the backyard spinning them and fighting off imagined monsters and dragons, while my much older cousins would sit in white plastic chairs under the shadow cast by the house. They would drink and laugh at jokes I didn't yet understand, but I always dreamed of one day joining them. I never got to. I was long gone before that time, and I have always wondered what life would have been had I seen these memories through. I wish I could have been a part of the life of these people instead of disappearing from it. These memories are like gold to me. They are priceless. They suggest a life I could have at one time lived, but which was diverted. Their smiling faces and the feeling of love and inclusion and welcome and most of all home were replaced with the new house smells and awkward first days in schools with foreign languages and a confusing sense of who I was or where. I would lay in my new bed each night and after a recent move and close my eyes and imagine I wasn't there. I would imagine that I was laying in any other bed somewhere I knew, somewhere else. Anywhere else would be more comfortable than this new world I was in now. But each morning I would open my eyes and be greeted by the feeling that I didn't belong there. If there is one overwhelming feeling of my childhood, it is that I never truly belonged anywhere. The worst part of these earliest memories is that they feed into nothing. There is no abrupt stop where the images end, only a slow wasting away, as though each memory is a picture cast into the ocean as I watch it slowly sink deeper into darkness. I did not witness the deaths of my aunt or my grandfather, or even know them when they died. I never saw my cousins grow up and build families of their own. Each of these people who were the foundation of my earliest years, who I was told were my family and as such were the heart of existence, continued on with a life I never knew and had no part in. There is no conclusion to their world in my own. Their lives simply drifted away from me into a gray fog that neither firmly created in me a sense of their departure nor anchored a sense of their presence. They are simply dreams now, and I wonder if they ever truly existed at all. My grandfather died in a home that was not his own, clutching to a life with that same firm grip I had felt years earlier. I knew in the days leading up to his death that it was imminent, and while I thought of him, a man who I would remember dearly, I wondered, did he in his last moments think of me? Did he even remember me by then? It had been years since I'd seen him, and it was for such a short moment that I fight to recall it now. A brief, sunny day in England when I had visited probably 20 years earlier, did he remember my face? Did he think of me or know that I was thinking of him? My aunt, who I loved so thoroughly, died with my mother and her husband and children at her side, but I was not there. I was thousands of miles away, and I knew that she too lay dying without any thought of me. But I thought of her. A picture put up on a shelf the day she departed shows her sitting at a small table in Spain in the sun with her hands crossed before her and a smile that always looked just a little bit mischievous. I remembered her. Did she remember me or know that I was looking at her picture when she left? I possess no end to the memory of these people whose lives briefly touched my own, but I hope they know that their short influence broke through the clouds and was a shaft of light in a gray sky. I remember no conclusion to their stories, and instead they only drift and fade into a nothingness. It is a nothingness that holds no dignity to their lives or the influence they possessed on the young me, and yet I feel their touch today in the little corners of who I am that I love so much. I possess no end to the memories of these people whose lives briefly touched my own, but I hope they know that their short influence broke through the clouds and was a shaft of light in a gray sky. I remember no conclusion to their stories, and instead they only drift and fade into a nothingness. It is a nothingness that holds no dignity to their lives or the influence they possessed on the young me. And yet I feel their touch today in the little corners of who I am that I love so much. Nonetheless, I am left with the hollowness that comes from never having followed these relationships to their bitter end. For that, I am eternally remorseful. And at the same time, I remember those days of my life as happy and free and full of love. I remember a general sense of that love and peace around me in those days, and for that, I am always thankful.